welcome to PCB Chat. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of Printed Circuit Design and Fabrication and Circuits Assembly Magazines. My guest today is Mike Conrad, President of Aqueous Technologies. As many listeners will know, Aqueous Technologies designs and builds cleaning and cleanliness test systems for electronics assembly. And they are celebrating their 25th anniversary this year, so congratulations on that remarkable achievement, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Now, at the SMTAI trade show last month, Mike gave what was a highly engaged talk on how just bad things can get when product doesn't perform as expected. His talk, appropriately enough, was titled SMT Wars, Lessons from a Contract Manufacturer and Their Customer Who Sued Them. Mike, could you maybe give us a little summary of the presentation?
Sure. Well, thanks for inviting me on your podcast. It's a pleasure and an honor to be part of it. And thanks also for the 25th anniversary. Congratulations. I was at work one morning and my phone rang, which is not atypical. And what was atypical was the fact that the person on the other end was a lawyer and he was asking for me by name. And in my industry, specifically cleaning, in the cleaning industry, I'm used to words like electrochemical migration and dendritic growth, CAF, and all these otherwise completely boring terms that I don't get to use very often outside of the workplace. And this attorney called, and he was dropping those exact terms, and it really caught my attention. And it turned out that he was representing a contract manufacturer who performed services for an OEM, and things went bad. And he was seeking my assistance, and they ended up hiring me as an expert witness in this multi-million-dollar litigation matter involving electrochemical migration and all different subsets of that. So I signed an NDA, so I can't get too explicit with all of the facts, but the generalities, I think, speak volumes anyway, and the generalities of this case was that this OEM had an idea. It was a clever idea. It would have revolutionized a segment in their industry. And the problem that they faced, which is a problem many people with good ideas face, is they didn't have money and they didn't have a factory to build this idea, this product. So they did what many people do in that predicament. They reached out to venture capitalists and they received money from venture capitalists, which was enough for them to engage the services of a contract manufacturer. The designers of the product, of the intellectual property, completed the design, completed the specifications, the entire statement of work, sent that downstream to their contract manufacturer and told them exactly what they wanted and exactly how to produce what they wanted. At first glance, it seemed like a pretty normal process. They specified FR4 as their laminate of choice. In fact, in an adjective that would later serve them poorly, they specified, quote, down and dirty, unquote, FR4, meaning the cheapest FR4 one can find. Okay, fine. They soldered their assemblies with water-soluble flux, which is not entirely popular today. Most people are reflowing with no clean and then cleaning if they need to clean. They reflowed with water-soluble flux, which in itself is not a problem. They cleaned the flux off the board using just water, which on the face of it seems reasonable since the flux is soluble in water. Then there was a very specific component that couldn't come into any contact with water that required hand soldering. A through-hole component, and this component had a high mass to it. So they applied lots of flux manually to the through-holes, to the leads, and then hand-soldered this high-mass part to the board using no-clean. So in their mind, no cleaning was required, which again, on the face of it, seems reasonable. It was a multi-layer board, and it's just interesting to note that there was no bake-out process at any time. And the board would be then potted in silicone and buried in the ground. The board's job, this device's job, was to send signals out to a nearby receiver mounted on a light pole at intersections, and it would help to control the flow of traffic. It would sense vehicles approaching. It would be able to speak to the signals and control the flow of traffic. It could speak to other intersections, let them know they're getting so many cars headed their way at a certain speed. And the whole premise of this revolutionary idea was to really make a smart traffic control system that municipalities could embrace. And it was a great idea. There was a few challenges. One of the challenges was that because they're going to bury this device into the ground, there's no power source in the ground. So they would power this device with a battery, and the battery was guaranteed to last 10 years, which was a reasonable time period to have this product last without additional service in between. So that was the premise of the idea. After a few months in the field, the batteries in these devices were failing at very high numbers. And when the batteries fail, they no longer can sense traffic approaching. They no longer can send a signal to the receiver to instruct the lights in a particular direction to change color. So when that happens, the safety mechanisms kick in, and the intersections, just all the lights in the intersections, just start flashing red, which does the opposite effect that they intended. It just provided gridlock. And these were installed all over North America. They were installed in cold parts of the country and hot parts of the country. They were installed everywhere. A few devices in each intersection all over North America. Well, once the battery started failing, they would replace the unit. They did an autopsy on the unit. They did a little failure analysis, and they determined that there was two problems, all relating from electrochemical migration. There was dendritic growth on the surface of the board, and there was CAF, conductive anodic filament failures, between the layers of the board. And that was causing unintended increases in conductivity. The dielectric properties of the laminate were compromised because there was extra conductivity between cathodes and anodes, and that was causing not so much dead shorts, it was causing the batteries to drain. And this was a huge problem. And the result of this huge problem was a recall of 50,000 units all over the country, 10 here, 100 there, 50 there. It was logistically and financially a nightmare. So the intellectual property holder sued the contract manufacturer for building faulty devices. The contract manufacturer said, look, we just built the exact way you told us to build. And that was the crux of the problem. We had the person with the money saying, build it this way. We had the person receiving the money saying, yes, sir, we'll build it that way. Nobody really took responsibility for the outcome until everything started failing, and then the lawyers got involved. So their process led to all sorts of problems. Number one, they selected the quote-unquote down-and-dirty FR4. There are materials that are more CAF resistant. CAF is basically subterranean dendritic growth. It's dendrites that form between the layers of the board. They exploit little micro cracks in the vias, which are relatively normal. These micro cracks are produced either due to dull drills when the through holes and the vias are being drilled out, or through dry weave of the laminate, or a number of other factors. Multiple thermal excursions can produce these little micro cracks, and the micro cracks themselves aren't a problem. However, when the barrels of the holes are plated, plating solution is put down there, and this plating solution can get into these little micro cracks. And then if there's moisture present, we now have the perfect formulation for electrochemical migration. We have moisture, we have conductive corrosive surface, which is the plating solution. We have the microcracks, which give it direction and a place to form. And then we have electrical current, which makes it all possible. So a little plating operation going on between the layers of the board. The absence, their wash cycle, their wash process was designed to remove water-soluble flux. And Therefore, they didn't run any chemical in it. One of the problems in that scenario is that the cleaning process is designed to remove far more than just flux. The cleaning process is designed to remove contaminant species from board fabrication, from component fabrication, from human interactions, and to remove flux. And these various contaminant species come in two forms. They come in polar and nonpolar. They are soluble in water and some are non-soluble in water. And because their cleaning process only uses water, that allowed the nonpolar substances, the contaminant species that were not soluble in water, to remain on the board untouched. So they weren't removing the totality of the contamination. They were only removing a minority of the contamination. When they hand soldered the component, this high mass component, onto the board, they used way too much flux. And the way no clean flux is supposed to work, at best, is the flux is applied to the area that's going to be soldered, and then heat is applied to burn out the activators and all the other nasty ingredients that are contained in flux. And in this case, so much flux was applied, heat was only applied to the area that was going to be soldered. All the areas around those leads covered in flux were not heated. The activators were allowed to remain on the board, and that allowed a conductive and corrosive residue to remain on the board. There was no bake-out process. So from the time the boards were fabricated in China, from the time they sat on a ship, being shipped thousands of miles across the ocean, to the time they were received, put in storage, and finally put onto the assembly line, moisture was allowed to pick up as a normal function, was allowed to pick up onto these boards. At no time, even just prior to potting, were these boards ever baked. So there was moisture between the layers of the board, which provided one of the three ingredients, conductive corrosive surface, electrical current, and moisture, to grow dendrites between the layers and on the surface of the board. They thought they would be okay because the boards were going to be potted and put into this little hockey puck-sized vessel and sealed with a gasket. And they thought they were going to be okay because all the nasty environmental surroundings would be locked out. What they didn't realize is that the potting actually trapped in all the sins of the process. So the nasty part of the process, the sins of the process, couldn't get out. The moisture couldn't get out. The conductive corrosive residues were not able to be removed. They were entombed in this sarcophagus, in this potted device. So from that, all sorts of bad things happened. There was dendritic growth on the surface of the assembly, which we were able to see. There was CAF, which is the subterranean dendritic growth between the layers of the board, and boards were failing and had to be recalled and ultimately rebuilt and in a more proper way. So this is the section of the presentation that I called, we don't have time to do it right, so let's just do it over. There was all sorts of factors influencing this, and kind of the takeaways from this story is the venture capitalists were pushing for a return on their money. So we found emails and memos from the intellectual property holder to the contract manufacturer saying, look, they're getting beat up. They need to ship product. They need to improve their income statement and show products shipping in the field. So various tests and some of the QC measures that they had put in place were pushed aside so they can hit their production schedules. The improper cleaning of the boards left conductive residues on the surface of the boards. The fact that CAF-resistant materials were not specified, and there are more CAF-resistant materials that could have been used as a laminate material, were not specified. IPC has a CAF testing standard, which nobody even knew about. They were never even considered. Excessive flux residues were allowed to remain on the assembly. Moisture was allowed to remain on and in the board. They rejected the advice from their contract manufacturers and other experts. 50,000 units were recalled, multi-million dollar lawsuit ensued, and each side spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on attorney's fees. And to me, the real takeaway, regardless of which side you're on, because sometimes it's your customer telling you to do things wrong. Sometimes it's your contract manufacturer telling the customer to let them do things wrong. But the takeaway is speak up. If your customer is telling you to do something wrong and it's not a free pass, it will still come down to liability issues with you. Speak up. Number two, listen to the experts. There are, when it comes to cleaning, there's not a lot of experts in the field working at the companies that are cleaning. Cleaning, for the most part, went away 30 years ago, and it's just now coming back. So there's not a lot of in the field sage kind of knowledge and wisdom when it comes to cleaning today. So seek experts to advise you on that. Seek and adopt best practices. There are all sorts of IPC standards. In this case, it was a calf testing standard that was not known about. Make sure that you seek and adopt best practices. They're called best practices for a reason. Consult the standards and then know your product. And the biggest thing is that there's two big things. Number one, know what the cost of failure is. If you're making an electronic flea collar, the cost of failure is an itchy dog. No big deal. If you're making an implantable defibrillator, the cost of failure is far higher than that. So know the cost of failure for your product. In this case, the cost of failure was having to go out to intersections all over North America and dig up product buried in the ground and replace it with new product. Extremely expensive proposition. Know the climactic environment where your product's going to go. Is it in a harsh environment? It needs to be cleaned to make sure that that harsh environment doesn't start the process of electrochemical migration. And know what your product looks like. If the components are very close together, if it's a very small board with a high density field of components, the tolerance, the ability for that assembly to tolerate residue is much lower than if the product was a through-hole board, for example, with components spread far apart. So those were the takeaways for this. And I was able to present this at SMTI, and I'm happy to say we had a full room and with lots of feedback. I think the lesson for this landed quite hard with a lot of companies.
So it's really an eye-opening story, Mike. And it's field failures, 50,000 products recalled, a lawsuit, all of which probably could have been avoided with the proper cleaning process and perhaps a little bit of initiative. I understand that you've turned the talk into a webinar as well.
Yes. We are producing a webinar. It'll be October 24th. That's part of our Tech Tuesday series of educational webinars at 8 a.m. Pacific time.
And information about that will be on your website?
It is right now in the events section of our website, yes.
And you will also be speaking as a part of a pair of reliability-based workshops in Texas later this month, correct?
Yes, that's right. We have on the 17th of October, we'll be in Austin. It'll be our company and four other companies, experts from DEC, from Alpha Assembly Solutions, from MicroCare, from Zestron, and ourselves. We'll all be speaking on the subject of reliability, how to ensure that assemblies are as reliable as possible following best practices. So we'll each be within our field of expertise discussing what best practices mean in terms of improving reliability on circuit assembly. So we're going to be in Austin on the 17th and in Texas and Richardson, Texas on the 19th.
Fantastic. And, so listeners will be able to talk with Mike in person on those dates or maybe tune in to the webinar on October 24th. I want to thank today's guest, Mike Conrad of Aqueous Technologies. And this has been PCB Chat with Mike Buteau. Have a great day.